Hello and welcome to Geek Culture Online. I am Patrick Bolin, and we're just going to start our fourth week. No, it's fifth. It's fifth. Week of MCU. This one is going to be a period piece, Captain America. Now, a little bit of housekeeping. This is going to be a couple of weeks into January, and I still haven't posted some of my presents, but we're going to be doing that this week. Or, in fact, I'll try to get it up earlier. But check out the previous ones if you haven't seen any or listened to any of our podcasts about the Marvel Universe. This is number 5 and the second to last one of Phase 1. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't recall when the Marvel started calling it Phase 1, but after the Avengers, they said that was the end of Phase 1 and they went into Phase 2. Now,
It was sometime around the first Avengers film.
Yeah.
That they started saying Phase 2 was going to be the next set of movies.
Right. I think once it came out, I think that's right. When...
And everybody, we're joined again by Larry and Ethan, my favorite co-hosts.
Good evening, afternoon, morning.
Hello.
Yes. And so let's just kind of jump right into this. Now, this starts off kind of similar to Iron Man 1. It just leaps right into the action.
Yes. Well, first there's a... The opening scene takes place in present day.
Yes.
Where they discover Cap, and then it jumps all the way back to...
The origin story.
Yeah, back to the 1940s.
Like, the whole movie is a flashback.
Right.
Yes, pretty much, right?
As with you mentioning, it's a period piece. If you think of the films that have come up until this point, everything has been current.
That's true.
And so now this is the first time we're really going back, and it's not just back a few years. We're going back all the way...
1942.
And this film came out in 2011. Mm-hmm. So that's about 70 years going back in the past. So
they vary from the comic books, but not the theme of it. Yeah, because correct. Basically how they get Captain America from the 40s, who he was designed
Avenger.
And developed in the 40s. The first Avenger.
There were no Avengers then.
Right. So it's like, wait a minute. But it's by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby were the creators of Captain America.
So this, interestingly, is one of the few characters that was not co-created by Stan Lee.
That is correct.
Although Stan Lee did write one of the early issues of Captain America, I believe it was issue 3 or 4, and he introduced Cap using the shield as a weapon. And of course, Stan Lee also did bring the character back in the 1960s. So in the
first issue of the Avengers.
What, it was it the first issue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they find him on ice.
I thought it was a few issues in.
No, he's on the cover.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but he brings him back in the Avengers and brings him back. Funny thing about it was only 20 years that he was on ice instead of 70 years.
Cause
it was
that is 60. True.
But still kind of the whole theme of somebody who's, you know, misplaced in time, it was in a different era,
and right? Out of time. Who feels kind of they're not really a stranger in a strange land.
Like,
I mean,
fish out of water,
sort of, right? I mean, yeah. It's their country, but it's obviously a much more modern version of it.
Yeah, so. And he's and just think of it, because like my parent is so stuck in the time period that she grew up in. It's for she doesn't like the 21st century. Just think how he would have been even though she saw everything evolve, he just went blink and wham.
Well, right, and I think that's much. Well, I think in a way that's maybe easier because you don't have all that baggage. You know, you just I'm 1941. I wake up. I'm like, what year is it? Either it's 1961 or 2011 or something. You go, right. Wow. Okay, now what's this? You know. What are computers? You know, what are cell phones? You know, all that stuff.
But think of all the things that he did miss, like miniskirts.
Well, is that a bad thing?
He also missed bell bottoms and leisure suits.
Right, so. Exactly.
Well, that's,
polyester ties.
Yes.
But right. But the point is, he's a fish out of water, kind of a stranger in a strange land, at least initially. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, let's be honest, the 1940s is a world where, Women are involved in the military, but not so much. We're 2011. They're very prominent, at least in the U.S. military.
Things were looked at greatly different.
Right, you know, African-Americans didn't really serve much. They served somewhat in the U.S.
Tuscany
military,
Raiders,
but not much.
They were isolated.
Right,
but
isolated, yeah.
They right, were but
segregated troops.
Right, now they're totally desegregated. It's they're, you know, they're prominent. They're four-star generals. So, yeah, so it's an adjustment.
A massive adjustment. Right. I just think the technology, everything was tube radios, and now everything is microchips.
Mm-hmm. Right. Everything was analog.
Yes.
Everything was analog.
Yes, they didn't call it analog, but that's all they knew.
Yeah. Oh, and that's interesting is because Nick Fury, when he's going around, that's Avengers. Never mind.
Different movie. That's okay.
Different movie. Okay, but this one, they do a flashback. They go like, oh my God, here's the shield. They show the shield, they do a flashback, and they start the whole thing. And he's a sickly... Yeah, tall schmuck.
Short
schmuck. And they also do Bucky. They show Bucky in there, right. But he is much older. Mm-hmm. Well, not much older, but he's older and he's big.
And bigger, yes.
Right. Much bigger. And I thought the special effects of making him look scrawny and small was excellent.
They were good. I mean, obviously, I knew I was looking for that, so it was good. I mean, what they had to do, right?
Right.
I mean, they did it best.
And I read that they had to do they had to shoot every scene where he was like that. They had to shoot it at least four times.
Wow!
So they would shoot the scene with Chris Evans in the scene acting out.
Mm-hmm.
Then they would shoot it with him in front of a green screen,
mm-hmm.
and then they would shoot it with the rest of the actors but without him,
mm-hmm.
so they could green screen him in. And then they would do another one with a body double, the small, scrawny guy. So at least four different shots for each of those scenes.
Just trying to think of keeping that straight because you're on set, then you got to go to a green screen and do the same thing.
Right. And then the other actors have to act out that scene without him, mm-hmm. without his line. So it's a lot of work.
A lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of...
Yeah.
But fortunately, it's just the first, 45 minutes or so of the film. So
Right. It's a chunk of the film.
It is a good chunk, though.
A chunk where he gets beaten up and everything, right? I mean, he gets kind of, intimidated and picked on, so to speak.
And one thing you mentioned about Bucky being older or at least close in age, that's one departure from the comics. Because in the comics, Bucky was actually Captain America's sidekick, a la Robin to Batman.
Mm-hmm.
He was a teenager who was Captain America's sidekick.
Yeah, because in the 40s, after Robin was introduced, everybody got a sidekick. Green Arrow got
Speedy. So it was Robin first, and then everybody, the floodgates opened. Gotcha.
Yes, everybody needed Bucky
was a teenager. Now so it's a little bit of a departure to have him be like Cap's contemporary.
Right. Again, this we're talking the comics, right?
Versus the actual movie. Yes,
right.
Yes, correct.
But now, the theme of the same
overall
situation,
is very good. Yeah, very, very, very close to the theme.
Yeah, him being rejected because he's an ill dude. Then him, the scientist coming to him, going like, "Hey, I know how badly you want in. Why don't we see what we can do for you?" The secret laboratory,
right?
Setting everything up.
Now, one thing Larry mentioned him being beat up in the alley. So one quick shot that I noticed was a little bit of foreshadowing is as the guy's beating him up. He picks up the garbage can lid and holds it up like a shield. So
yes.
It's kind of like a little foreshadowing to him
and
his shield.
And he says this throughout a lot of films. And he says he had enough. And Captain America always comes back with, "I can do this all day."
Yeah.
Yeah, he does say.
He says that in almost every film.
Yeah, so that's kind of like part of his trademark or part of his character.
Like his line, like
yes.
his
right.
you know,
yes. yeah, so
his trademark line.
So they do very similar to the scientist, the secret agent that shoots the scientist, and the reason why they can't duplicate this because he was the prototype was the scientist kept everything in his head because he came from Germany and he was afraid of it.
Erskine,
and it being taken and abused. So what he did was he kept the formula and everything in his head, and he only made that batch. Just for him.
Which is why after that, we talked a little bit about it when we talked about the Hulk.
Yes.
After that, everybody's chasing. They're chasing this secret soldier.
Right. The secret serum, so to speak.
Right.
The secret sauce.
The secret sauce, exactly.
And they've always and like, and now in the movies, the reason why he is the Hulk is because he was trying to maybe that gamma radiation was the key behind it.
Right.
Because
now, is that the origin from the comics as well?
I mean, no.
No. Okay. No.
See,
right.
The gamma bomb, it was like how they always did nuclear
like
bomb tests.
Like an H-bomb or whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and he got exposed
to one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Okay. Right. So, I know that's how the MCU is setting up the story.
But in the comics, there have been other instances, variations where people have been trying to duplicate the super soldier serum.
Yeah, that's where the Man-Thing came from because he was a scientist that was given some parts of the formula that they had figured out, and he, to prevent mobsters from getting to it, he injected himself with it, fell into the swamp, and became the Man-Thing.
Okay, so let me. So again, this is. I'm a comic book person, but I didn't read these comics necessarily. So I'm still curious about the Hulk versus.
Oh, okay.
Right. So what came first? What was the chicken and egg?
The bomb testing was from the comic books from the 60s.
The bomb testing, right,
yes.
Which
and
made
the Hulk.
Okay.
Turned Banner into the Hulk.
Okay.
And then the Marvel Ultimate Universe, they kind of, the modern version of the universe, they did laboratory testing accident.
Right.
And then the Marvel movies in Cinematic Universe tied it to Captain America, saying that through a laboratory accident from trying to rediscover the super soldier formula is why he became
Dr. Banner became the Hulk.
Yeah.
Right. He overloaded on it.
And if you remember in the film of the Hulk, when Blonsky becomes the Abomination, he gets the gamma rays with the serum, which is what turns him into the Abomination.
Correct. They have him strapped down. They give him those injections.
Yeah.
Right. Hulk
so,
movie. Yeah.
So,
from
so
08.
There's also somewhat of a... I've always taken kind of an implication that part of the reason why the serum worked on Steve Rogers was because of who he was too.
Mm-hmm.
You know that he was
because he did say that
because he's kind of like he's pure of heart and he's
okay right he's a patriot,
he's
he wants
doing
to serve
for the right reason
is the doctor in there
but why not then why not Dr. Banner? Does he mean he's a scientist?
But it wasn't the right formula. The right radiation because in the comic books it was the vaccination and using what they called Z rays in the comic books, but in the movie they call it Vita rays.
Yeah. Okay,
so it's a combination of those two, and probably Steve's chemical and biological makeup is what made it.
Right.
Yeah, because it's just, if you don't have all those little combinations. Just one thing off, because obviously to get into the military service, he was heavily vaccinated. So they didn't think about everything that he already was done into his body.
You have to be in good physical shape, and yada yada.
He has to be the right, but they also had to be the right personality type too.
Correct.
He would turn into the Red Skull. To be abusive with it, basically.
Like he said, the scientist said, and he says that somebody without power understands not to abuse it when he does get power.
Right.
Like the Red Skull was the prototype. He was the first one.
Right.
And it messed up because he didn't know that he was supposed to use Vita rays at the time.
Right.
So that's the straight
serum.
Right.
You get the Red Skull serum and the Vita rays, you get Steve Rogers.
Right. Correct.
Now, would you agree that Dr. Erskine is obviously supposed to be an Albert Einstein?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I mean,
he's from Germany.
Like Oppenheimer, Einstein, right?
Yeah.
Like, remember, there were, as we, a little history lesson, there are many, German scientists that the United States and the Allies, brought over. Obviously, some were Jewish German scientists, so they were being persecuted. But others just didn't believe in the cause, so they left Central Europe for other shores. So
now,
and we benefited from that.
Now, backtracking a little bit to some of the earlier scenes. So before we see Steve, we see the Red Skull or Schmidt as he's being called.
Schmidt, right?
With a mask on.
With a mask on. That he steals the Tesseract from from Norway, and so that's kind of also tying back to Thor because you have the
the carving on the door, which is similar to
the life tree.
The life tree that Thor shows, right?
Yeah, and the life tree, the only reason why I think Schmidt figured out what it was is because it was the snake, and he presses the snake's eye and pops out the door where the Tesseract was in.
Right.
And so that, again, ties back to the last scene of Thor, when because Nick Fury goes, look what we have is the Tesseract, which then leaping to the end of the movie, they manage to retrieve the Tesseract and they give it to the pre-Shield, which was the SSR, and so they've had it since the 40s.
Right.
So it's just, it all
scurried away, so to speak.
Yes, right. And it all ties together on that one.
Yep, it all ties together. And then one little reference that's made in that scene as well. First of all, the director, Joe Johnston, one of the films he worked on was Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh,
really?
He was on the crew for Raiders of the Lost Ark. And so that Schmidt makes a reference. He said that, I think you had the line, didn't you, Patrick?
Yes, he's Schmidt. He says the Fuhrer should be looking for things like this and not digging for trinkets in the desert.
In the desert.
Oh, when I remember hearing that line, I'm like, God, that sounds like Raiders of the Lost Ark. But I didn't know that.
What's really funny is in 2019, those two universes can now cross.
How can they cross?
Well, because Disney owns Lucasfilm and Marvel. So.
Correct. Okay.
So Captain Marvel and Indiana Jones can actually bump into each other.
Yeah. Now the other thing is another film that this director did in the 1990s was the film The Rocketeer, which was also based on a comic book.
Love that movie.
Based on a comic book, took place in pre-World War II. It was late 1930s.
Right, the 30s. Right.
But if you recall, in that film, the Rocketeer gets the rocket pack from Howard Hughes.
Yes.
Correct.
Howard Stark is really kind of a Howard Hughes.
Yes.
He's based loosely on Howard Hughes as being that.
Right, right. I mean,
eccentric
Eccentric billionaire, philanthropist, playboy.
And he's got that little pencil mustache from the 40s.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So again, some more connections there. Now, another, there's an Easter egg. So Bucky and Steve go to this.
The World Fair.
The World Fair, right?
Okay.
Which kind of ties back to Iron Man 2.
Yes, it does.
With the whole
the Stark Fair.
The Stark Fair, right. But there's a big Easter egg in the middle there, which there's a case that says something about the artificial human or something like that. And there's a man in a red suit in this large case.
Now, that is
An early Marvel character, the original Human Torch, which was from the late 1930s. 1930s. So he's the first superhero, if you will. It was before Marvel was even Marvel Comics.
Yeah, it was Timely Comics.
Okay.
In fact, it was Marvel issue number 8. At the time, Timely didn't know what to do with it, and it was called Marvel Comics. And they gave these issues away at the movie theater. It was a very low run, and they were in black and white.
They gave away for free.
And because back then, when you got to see the Lone Ranger serials, they'd give you the Lone Ranger
mask. That's right. My Aunt Lydia would tell me when she would go to see all the serials, for 5 cents or 10 cents. Right. They have the intermissions, and they give away all kinds of promotional items and all kinds of
Flash
stuff.
Flash Gordon rings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All kinds. She came
the
home
Buster
with
Brown, the Buster Browns from the 40s all the way through the 70s, you would get prizes when you buy the shoes.
Right.
Right, right.
So the Human Torch. So not the Human Torch from Fantastic Four, although that's
the original.
This is the original Human Torch, who's an android. Yeah. He's an android.
Oh.
And in the comics,
because of the Fantastic Four, it's a human.
When Stan Lee introduced the Fantastic Four in 1961, which ushers in the Marvel Comics era, one of the characters he included was the Human Torch, so it's kind of loosely based on this character, but now being a human.
Just
the original Human Torch, though, was an android, and in the comic timeline, his android body is what becomes the Vision.
In the comics. In the Avengers comics.
Obviously,
which makes sense because Vision's an android.
Yes, exactly. Right. He is an android. Yes.
But ironically, he's called the Human Torch. So if he's an android, why is he called the Human Torch?
Because he would.
Well, see, the storyline behind that is when the scientist made the Human Torch, and he goes, "This is fabulous." He developed and built him in this vacuum chamber. And when he's exposed to air, he bursts into flame.
Right.
And so that's why
he gets the oxygen or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so they showed. That's why they showed him at the World Fair in this tube because it's a vacuum tube.
So that's just like that's very much an Easter egg because if you don't see it.
I don't know those comics, so to me it didn't matter.
And then
to me.
The other part of that is that, of course, well, there's two things. So, of course, Chris Evans did play the Fantastic Four version of the Human Torch.
That's right. That is correct. I do remember that.
The Fox Fantastic Four movies,
20th Century Fox version. Yeah.
And then, but also in the comics in the 1970s, Marvel introduced a team called the Invaders. So the books came out in the 70s, but they took place during World War II.
It was a period comic,
basically. And that team was made up of Captain America,
the original
Human Torch, and Prince Namor, the Submariner.
And it included Bucky.
And the Human Torch had a sidekick named Toro, who also would turn on fire. Yeah, and then they introduced Union Jack. He's kind of like the UK version of Captain America.
Right. I did see some of those comics, but I remember like a character called Union Jack for some reason.
Yeah. So that's another little tie-in.
It was a really good comic. I have all those.
So again, if you're a big comics fan. Which I'm a comics fan, but I didn't read those comic books or most of those.
That was one for the comic fans.
I missed that one.
But again, if that whole sequence, the
film fans who had seen it, Iron Man 2, would definitely make the connection with Tony Stark presenting at Stark World, and then his father presenting there, and he's got the flying car. The funny thing is that when
Howard Stark at the World Fair, he had a very similar beginning. He had all these dancing girls,
and the bright red car.
In this case, that would have been Tony's armor.
And I really like that because, I mean, obviously, you know, we've already seen Tony Stark, you know, Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, and now here's again, we're kind of going back in time to see the father more, to see kind of the origin of Stark Industries.
I like this guy better than they got. More for the TV series, they got that guy from Mad Men to play.
Well, no, this guy was... So the actor, Dominic Cooper, who was in this film playing Howard Stark, plays him in the TV series in Agent Carter. But the other actor played Stark in Iron Man 2, and then I think also in Iron Man 3. And then also, wasn't he the one in Civil War when they had the flashbacks?
Playing an older version.
He plays the older version, and Dominic Cooper plays the younger version.
Why don't they just throw some gray hair in Dominic Cooper? Because I liked him so much better.
Yeah.
You know, just I thought he presented the role so much better. No, here's something funny is that I freeze-framed it when they rejected him.
Rejected Steve Rogers,
and it had a list of all his medical conditions why he was rejected.
Okay, so what were they?
They said he has asthma. He was exposed to scarlet fever, rheumatic fever,
yeah.
Sinusitis. A chronic or frequent cold, high blood pressure, palpitations or a pounding of the heart, easy fatigability. Head or heart trouble, nervous trouble of any sort. I love that. That's what it was said. Nervous.
I think I remember seeing that, like, without freezing it. Yeah. Nervous, some sort of nervous trouble. Like,
has had household contact with TB because he said his mom died
from
TB.
Right.
Parent/sibling with diabetes/cancer. So it's a lot.
I mean, they're covering a lot of. That's a lot of bases. I mean, geez. Right. I mean, asthma. I'm asthmatic. I mean, so. Back then.
Because, like, you know, a pilot back then couldn't wear glasses.
You had to have 20/20 vision.
So this scene, and then he stamps it as a 4H. I mentioned this 4F off camera. Now, 4F means that you're medically not able to serve. Now, in the trailer, they showed the same scene, except when he stamped it, it said rejected.
Well, I mean, if you're watching a trailer and deciding, should I see this movie, obviously rejected is a very... I mean, I get what's going on here. They spoke to the broader audience. Right. So, okay, all right. He's being rejected, yet somehow he becomes Captain America. How did that happen? I want to see that movie.
So, of course, the storyline is that he's tried repeatedly to five a list. Times. He's, right. He changes his address, his name.
Right. He's doing everything.
He's doing everything, but he keeps getting rejected. And so then he tries while they're at the World's Fair. And then that's when the scientist sees him.
And he stumbles across him.
Right. And he's aware that he's tried to enlist all these times.
Yeah, they have a file folder of all this tries.
Right, right. So
he's like, are you from Brooklyn or Paramus, New Jersey?
Right,
Ohio? Or... And he asks him, "Do you want to kill Nazis?"
Oh yes, his first test, and he goes. He says, "I don't want to kill Nazis. I just don't like bullies."
Mm-hmm. And right. So then that
was the first test.
So then the doctor stamps him as 1A, which means that he's
perfectly healthy
and medically fit to serve
in any capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really funny. And then he gets to meet Agent Carter. Yay! I met her too at C2E2.
Don't rub it in.
Wow. She's even more amazing in person. No.
The actress, you mean Haley Atwell?
Yes.
Yes.
Her accent.
Peggy Carter.
Yeah, Agent Carter. Her accent is just will melt you. Anyway.
She is British, that is correct.
Yes, she is.
She's British and American, but right, born in London.
And it just, and she's a little bit taller than me. She's, she was like this tall. Okay, for the people that can't.
She's short, is what you're trying to say. My microphone's being cut off now.
I'm 6'5".
Okay, anyway. next issue. Keep moving.
And then they show him going through the service and struggling through all the training.
Yes.
He can't get through anything except when they're given a mental test where at the end they go like, okay, nobody in 17 years has gotten this flag off this flagpole. So everybody's fighting to climb up the flagpole and pulling each other down and getting to it. Nobody can get to it. And he looks at it, and then the prize is whoever can get the flag can drive back to base instead of jogging back to base. So he looks at it and goes like, okay, I can't do this physically. He undoes the pin, and the flagpole falls to the ground. And he takes the flag and hands it over. And he goes, here you go.
Right.
So
sometimes you need the brains versus the brawn. You need leaders too.
Yeah.
His drill sergeant, if you will, is portrayed by the great
Tommy Lee Jones. Yeah, great actor for this movie. Yeah,
and so that was almost a test. And then the weeks later, they're showing him through the testing, and the doctor's there with Agent Carter, and Tommy Lee Jones is complaining about, he says, I fought for this program to get this program off the ground, and you give me this 90-pound weakling. And right. He goes like, he says, he's not ready for this. So he grabs a fake grenade, pops the pin, and throws it in the middle of the men. The one that he wants to be Captain America scatters away, and Steve Rogers throws himself on the grenade.
Right.
And that's test number two.
Right.
And so that proves the point that he's got on the inside.
He's got the heart. Right, he's right.
He's got the makeup.
Right,
for
he's
it.
Right. He's a true soldier. He'll sacrifice himself.
Yeah, and the night before the test, the doctor goes there with a bottle of stuff. I forgot what it was, and he goes like, and he says, whatever happens, I don't want you to change. And he says, you're not a perfect. Yeah, he says, don't be a perfect soldier, but be a good man. And he points at his chest. And right. Then the next day, they put him. They give him all the shots and stuff. He put him in this metal box. Howard Stark fires up the Vita rays. Teeth are loose, and they go through, and he comes out of it, and he's like a foot and a half taller, and he's built completely, right. Utterly built.
Right.
Oh, and this scene was ad-libbed by. Agent Carter, when he walks up to her and he's like oiled up and everything, she reaches out and touches his chest, and she comes out of it, and she admits later that this was wasn't supposed to happen because she was so astonished by how built he was.
Right.
Because I think that was the first time she saw him without a shirt, and so they used that take in the movie.
Sure, I would. I thought it was a good, good scene.
Yeah. And so now Then the army goes like, well, okay, you're a perfect soldier, so what do you do with a perfect soldier? You put him on stage so he dances.
Sure.
He sells bonds.
Right.
So they put him in
a PR machine.
Right?
Yes, basically. That's
right.
He's
from Central Casting. I mean, literally and physically from Central Casting, right.
Yes. And so the senators and everybody that was behind the experiment We kind of skip gloss over. The scientist gets killed, and he brings down the guy that does the shooting. The problem is that he is a Hydra agent. This is the first time we're exposed
to Hydra. Right.
Hydra, and he goes, "Hail Hydra!"
Right, in any of the movies so far, in the MCU movies, right?
Right. And he bites down on a cyanide capsule and dies, so they can't trace it back to the Red Skull.
Right.
And the Red Skull's behind all this because he was a failure at the experiment. He wanted the scientist back to correct it so he can be back to normal, but with super strength and everything that he got from the super soldier formula. So now he's going around the country selling bonds, and he gets a version of his costume, but it's like a stage version, and he gets his first shield, which looks like the very first shield in the comic books, which is more of a police badge shape.
Right.
And it's just metal.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's for show. It's right. It's for the stage. It's for the selling. I mean, it's PR is what it is.
Very much PR.
And he acts out what is the cover of the actual the cover of the first issue of Captain America, where he's punching Hitler in the mouth.
Oh.
But in the film, he's punching an actor portraying Hitler on stage,
selling bonds.
Yeah,
we're berating that part of the movie, but this is very important. This is actually, this is a huge thing in the United States. I mean, and selling government bonds. I mean, my aunt and family members would talk about buying these bonds in World War II. So, it was an important feature. But as we said,
it helped to fund the war effort.
But at the same time, a super soldier on stage versus in the battlefield in Nazi Germany
he wasn't living up to his potential.
Right, exactly.
And the comic books back then, most of them went to the war drive. They were, handed back in and recycled.
Oh, okay.
But the ones, what they would also do is send them overseas to the soldiers. And so the soldiers would get these things. They'd be sitting in the foxholes and stuff. And, of course, when you evacuate a foxhole, you're only going to take what you need. So these were left behind. So the Germans and other soldiers that would find this would stumble across like Superman and Captain America thinking that these were real people that were being reported on in the comic books.
Right, well.
So
you never know. I mean, they had their, mad scientists. We had ours, what else,
I think it's just amazing that probably somewhere in a foxhole buried underneath crates and stuff is a whole bunch of comic books that need to be found.
Yeah, well, also a lot of those comics got destroyed as part of the recycling, that's part of the reason the value of so many of those.
They were done on newspaper prints, so they weren't designed to last.
Right.
Low print runs, they're destroyed, they were given away to the paper drive, and it just so that's why there's so few out there.
I mean, like you were saying earlier, how you'd go to these movies or these, these serials, and they'd hand out freebies. The irony is that free issue of a comic book might be worth tens of thousands of dollars if it was, today. If it's still around.
Well,
so.
My dad would be given a quarter, which was a lot of money back in the 40s, and he would go to the movies with his brother and him.
Right.
And right next to the theater was a little collectible store that was called Doc's Hobbies and Collectibles, which happens to be the name of my place that I opened up in the 90s.
More on that in another podcast.
Yes. And he would go to the movies and for a dime and then go next door to the collector's shop because they had balsam wood model kits up front of the planes and trains and stuff. And on the back shelf, there was new comics and old comics. You could trade comic books or get two for a dime, the used ones, or a brand new one for a dime. And so he over the weeks and months and stuff, he bought a whole bunch of comic books. And he went to school one day, came home, and all his comics were gone. And he goes, "Mom, what happened to my comics?" And he says, "Well, they were going around collecting paper for the war effort, so I gave them all away to the war effort."
Your father wasn't too happy about that.
Oh yeah, he wasn't. But years and years and later, I would show him. I had all these reprints, and I was showing him. He goes, "What's that?" And I go, "These are reprints of some of the very first issues." And he points at Action Number One. He goes, "Oh, I had that." And he goes, "Oh," he pointed at World's Finest Number 7. And he goes, "Oh, I had that." And Police Comics number 10, which is the first first issue of Plastic Man. And he looked at Wonder Woman, he goes, oh, I had that. And he goes, he looked at Detective number 27, he goes, oh, I had that. He looked at Batman number 1, he says, I had that one too.
So your mother gave those all away for the war effort. See, again, since it's such a period piece, and that's what people did. You know what I mean? I mean, that was
nylons,
you
know, the, right, glass, selling,
right,
metal.
Right, the, you know, people there, right? This, right, you didn't use nylons.
My father always joked with all the recycling efforts. He's like, I did recycling as a kid during the war. You know,
they showed a scene when Steve Rogers is sitting in the movie theater, and this is when he gets beat up in the alley, and he uses the trash can as a shield,
right.
And they're showing the war effort and a little Tommy collecting and recycling metal.
Yes,
and so the guy's saying, "Come on, get on with it. I want to see the movie,
the cartoon."
Right. But this is a crucial part. You know, I just want to, if I can touch on just, and I'll be as brief here as possible. But you know, my first exposure, no joke, to Captain America wasn't the comic books, and I think I've talked to Patrick.
Cartoon?
Or the cartoons? No, I mean it was my Aunt Lydia, who was 80. She'll be 81 shortly, or 81. And you know, she had the super beta videotapes of the Captain America, the serial in black and white.
And that's when he had a gun.
From the 1940s, yes. I mean, she would sit me down like on a, you know, I was, you know, a young teen, you know, 13, whatever, 14. And I'd be home, and she'd say, "Hey, come on, let's, you know, we get out some candy. I'd pour her like a drink, pour her some cognac, and we would literally watch." And there'd be like three or four episodes in a tape, usually four, because you do 4 hours on a beta videotape.
I would love to see
that. And of course, this is, you know, so this would have been after I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark. We mentioned it a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. And of course, Raiders of the Lost Ark was modeled on the 1940s serials that Steven Spielberg and George Lucas adored. And so once I started watching, and I vividly remember watching Captain America. We watched Buck Rogers, Lash LaRue.
Flash Gordon. Ranger.
Right. But she loved Lash LaRue. Flash Gordon, and Captain America. Those were her three favorites. And so I remember watching Captain America with her on this Friday evening. I'm like, "Aunt Lydia, this is just like Raiders of the Lost Ark." She says, "Yes, exactly. This is what they're talking about, exactly." And so it was, you know, it was the episodes in black and white. And of course, every 5 minutes he got into like a battle or a fist fight or something, like the movie, but I mean, it was much more rapid fire. And of course, everything was a cliffhanger. You know, every episode was a cliffhanger. Of course, we didn't wait. We'd pause it. We'd go to the bathroom. Right. But yeah, we watched like three or four episodes in an evening. And
that
seems so
amazing.
Yeah, and I just remember that kind of was the epiphany. Like, okay, now I see the pattern of Raiders of the Lost Ark with Indiana Jones modeled after these series, and I saw others, but really with the Captain America, it was a lot like the cliffhangers, and you know, he's tied up and the building's burning down or something like that.
And he
was a la Indiana Jones. Right. He had a gun in that, right? He had a gun in that one, exactly.
And the Batman serial from the 40s, he had a gun too.
Right. I don't remember watching that one, but yeah, but she was.
I had a set of those, and I had a relative accidentally, purposely record over it. It was a VHS tape.
So this would have been the midnight, like 84, 85. I was watching this, you know, in at home, and it, like I said, it's like, okay, now I get where the tie-in is from the, you know, and why they chose maybe that era of Indiana Jones and stuff. So it all goes back to Captain America. I mean, for me, when I watch those Captain Americas in black and white, you know, fighting the Nazis and all that stuff, and being a super soldier for the U.S. Army, it all kind of, you know, it ties in. So literally, no joke, it tied in for me the modern version of Raiders of the Lost Ark from 81, and of course, you know, the future movies.
And they, in the middle of the film, to kind of tie this to the TV series and the TV movie of Captain America.
Right, from the
1970s. He grabs one of the dancers' helmet because it's blue and it has a star in it, like his uniform, and he goes rescues the Howling Commandos. So that harkens back to the helmet of the 70s movies. And then I was going to make another point. And then later on, when he's trying to rescue Bucky, he's driving a motorcycle. He takes his shield and slams it into the front of the motorcycle to use it as a windshield,
which goes
back to the motorcycle windshield shield from the movie. And I thought, they did a little tip of the hat to both of those in there,
as well as the actor who played Captain America in those 1970s TV movies, an actor by the name of Reb Brown. He makes a cameo in this film.
Oh, he does?
Yes. So, oh, okay. So remember we mentioned...
I didn't know about this.
Remember we mentioned in The Hulk, for example, Lou Ferrigno makes the cameo,
right? Right. It's security guard, yeah.
So kind of similar to this. So if you recall the scene where Stan Lee makes his cameo in this film, it's when Cap is doing a demonstration for the military... some of the military generals and what have you, and Stan Lee plays one of them.
Right.
And Stan Lee makes some crack about, I thought he was going to be taller or something.
I thought he would be taller.
Yes, yes.
So the other commander that he turns to and says that to is the actor who played Captain America
in the 1970s TV show. I never saw the TV show.
Well, obviously they couldn't get the guy from the 40s because he's
sure, of course not. Of course he's probably long gone. Well, who knows? But most likely no longer with us. Yeah, although he was a young guy. I remember to see these Captain America movies. Of course, to see Captain America and the Avengers movies, it is such a retro feel to me. I mean, just even like. His cap, like he wears, you know, like his, it's not a mask, but it's like a, you know, it's like covering his identity. Mm-hmm. Right. It has a very, like, 1940s-ish, 1970s-ish feel to me.
When the very first couple of issues of Captain America, he didn't have, like, a neck piece on it. It was like a thing
like a mask, covered, like a skull mask, cap almost.
A skull cap mask type of thing. I don't recall what issue, but the neck piece came in, so it was like a hoodie at that point.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But again, it's that headpiece. I don't know how to call it. It's not really a mask. It's much more. It's a very retro feel to me. I mean, even in Avengers, even in the future movies, it's obviously doesn't wear it all the time. But when he's wearing it, it harkens back. It's like a 1940s type thing, which makes sense. Yes.
And now the Heimdall scream that is famous in for all films. They use it in Star Wars. They use it in cartoons and stuff, where it's just like yay. They drop it in here when Captain America is being chased on the motorcycle by the agents of Hydra on motorcycles. One of them hits something and goes flying, and they throw that in there.
So what's this called again?
It's the Heimdall scream. It's the most famous scream that nobody knows really where it came from, but it is always used in films. It just everybody that tries and has a film tries to pushes it in there somewhere. It's
they're just trying to throw it in, basically.
Yeah, okay. It's just nobody knows who originally recorded it or where it came from. But it goes back to the early 30s.
I think I know what you're trying to say. I know. I've heard this over and over again. Yeah. I just thought it's some sort of like sound effect that they just, it's like a go-to sound effect, but they try to purposely throw it in.
Yeah, they do that intentionally. It's just that, I've tried, the few films I have made so far, I've tried to put it in there, but there just isn't a justification for it. But, you know, this summer I am going to do more complex one.
Okay.
And I'm going to try to find a place to put it in there. It's
it's called the Wilhelm Scream.
Wilhelm Scream.
Right. It's spelled Wilhelm Scream. Mm-hmm. And it said it's a stock sound effect of a man screaming that has been used in at least 389 films and countless television shows as well. It originates from sound effects recorded for the 1951, something from 1951.
No, it goes back even farther than that.
Oh, really? Okay, it says, I think Distant Drums, the film Distant Drums, it says. At least that's what it's saying, so.
Yeah, I think the first time it was used, this guy falls into, like, a lake or a pond and gets eaten by an alligator.
Right. It says from Distant Drums, the scene from the film, soldiers are wading through the swamp in the Everglades, which is in Florida, and one of them is bitten and dragged underwater by an alligator.
Okay, there.
And again, that scream does make sense because that's kind of something. It is kind of a blood-curdling scream.
Yes,
I will admit to that, and that'd be appropriate. The scream for that scene was recorded later in a single take, along with five other short, pained screams. Mm-hmm. Which were labeled "Man getting bit by an alligator and he screamed." Well, that would be appropriate, right? Right. The fifth scream was used for the soldier in the alligator scene, but the fourth, fifth, and sixth screams recorded in the session were also used earlier in that film when three Native Americans are shot during a raid on a fort. So yeah, the Wilhelm scream, Wilhelm. And it's true. It's one of those things. It also was incorporated into a scene in Star Wars, where Luke Skywalker shoots a stormtrooper off the ledge.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. That's where I know it from. I noticed, I'm like, when I watch Star Wars over and over again, I'm like, God, this scream is in all these movies.
Any film that you see somebody falling, even off of a horse or something, it's more than likely it's that one. Or just a distorted version of that one. So it's just, so now that you know about it, you know, next time you see a film and you see somebody screaming and falling, see if it's that scream.
Yeah.
And then because then the next time you see another film and watch it, it will be the same scream.
Right. And I've noticed that. Now here's a fun fact, and maybe this will kind of burst some people's bubbles, but it says in February, and they said it was used in Indiana Jones movies, yes, other Star Wars films.
Yes.
But it said in February 2018. It was announced Star Wars will no longer use the Wilhelm scream, with Rogue One, a Star Wars story from 2016, being the last known film to use it.
Yes.
So again, so
it's being retired, but I think it's just because now it's everybody's expecting it.
Right, and it says it's kind of like an in-joke. It's a joke within a joke from like people in the industry. And it's true. Now that they're talking about the scenes from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, if you remember near the end where they're on the bridge.
And strong bridge, Indy.
Right, strong bridge, right, exactly, with Short Round, which I love that final scene. I love the movie. I love that final
scene. Hang on, lady. We're going for a little ride.
Right, and it's a big ride. And then so when he's fighting the thuggy henchman, mm-hmm, when, you know, he throws him down, and there's one that falls, and it's like a river full of alligators. They say they use the Wilhelm scream as the alligator's tearing apart his clothes. Yeah, I do remember that scream. So yeah, it's interesting. I did that again. I just thought that's like a typical thing that they use in their bag of tricks, and I guess it is, but it's like a joke now.
Well, if it's a behind the scenes type of thing, so if you're not into the technical aspects of film, it would go like flying past you. But once you've made aware of it, you can never unknow it.
But I wasn't aware of it until you just mentioned it, and I've noticed it's like this. It's like I hear this scream over. Now, of course, I've seen Star Wars. Mm-hmm. 30 times in my life, I've seen
amateur.
Whatever. Anyway, I've seen
135.
I'm younger than you, so I can catch up. Anyway,
in the theater, I saw it over 50 times.
Yeah, no,
a total of 135.
How many times have you seen Return of the Jedi?
Return of the Jedi, yes. 62.
How many times at the theater?
37.
How many times in 1983 at the theater?
Five. The week it opened.
Okay, but 1980, the year 1983, how many times did you see Return of the Jedi?
That was the year it opened. Yeah, 5 in the first week it opened. Okay, total. That would have been, no, the 37, okay. 37 before it 37? Left the theater.
37?
Yeah.
Damn, I thought I'd beat you. I saw 13 times in 1983.
Amateur. We got off track. We went from the Wilhelm scream to how many times we've seen Star Wars films in the theater first run.
Let's get back to
So we got to the he rescues Bucky. The trouble is that Bucky dies.
Quote unquote dies. Movie death.
Yeah, and on a train. But in the comic books, both Bucky and Captain America were going to prevent a missile from flying from Germany over the pole to hit America. So they're dismantling and destroying the rocket, and it explodes. Captain America falls off the rocket, and Bucky's still on it, and Captain America says, "Jump, jump, jump," and he goes, "No, I can handle this." Blammo.
And that's in the comic books.
That's when Captain America falls in the ice and gets frozen.
Gotcha. That
in
makes
this
sense.
Case, he's aboard a super plane, which is kind of like the super wing that Germany had in the World War II.
Right.
And
it looked like a B-17 bomber to me, like one of those old...
Wings. You know.
But
one note about Bucky. So when they show him later in the film where he has on the blue... He has like a blue shirt that has like the flap that buttons across.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the costume that Bucky had in the comics. He's basically dressed like how Bucky is in the comics, except in the comics he had a mask on in addition to it, so he doesn't have the mask on.
Yes, like a Robin mask.
Oh, right. Because he was the sidekick. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So it just it was very similar to that. So now everybody thinks he's dead. Oh, and
I thought he was dead. I mean, I thought, well, that was Bucky.
Red Skull and Captain America are on this plane, they damage it to the point where he can't
really control. Right, they're like battling on the plane, the fist fight,
the Tesseract.
Right.
And the Tesseract, Red Skull grabs it and he activates it somehow.
Right. Exactly.
And then he vaporizes. And I'm using air quotes on that.
Right. Right. Well, you think he's vaporized.
The Think Phase 3, but for now, he's vaporized.
Well, I mean, I thought he was gone. I mean, yeah, it's just like Bucky.
Everybody did too. But you see a bunch of stars, like a portal open above them, and he vaporizes and he melts away. So that's
right.
So everybody,
it looked pretty bad though. Yeah, I mean. Yeah.
And it melts through the plane, and the Tesseract falls into the ocean.
Correct.
And then Agent Carter and Steve are kind of bantering because he says, I got to land this thing because I can't let these bombs go off. I can't let me anywhere there. He can't control anymore, so he's got to ditch the plane. So they both talk about dancing. Now, I think this is going to play into Avengers 4 very much so.
Really?
Yes, because when they went back and refilmed stuff, there was a period scene they refilmed.
You did say that.
Okay. So the scene is basically them being like, he goes, I don't know how to dance. And she goes, I'll teach you. And he says, fine, we'll meet at the store club next Saturday at 8 p.m.
Right.
And he goes, well, we'll have them play a slow song because I don't want to step on your... And the radio goes dead.
Right.
Okay. Now, in Avengers Ultron,
which is Avengers 2.
Right.
Avengers
2. The Scarlet Witch makes him have like a flashback nightmare
where he's
actually dancing.
Yes, right. That's right.
Okay.
Right, that's right.
Now,
we'll talk about that in another podcast.
Yeah, keep those two scenes. Think okay. This one, that one, and then what I think is going to happen in Avengers 4. So these daisy chains together. Okay. Right. Now, he's gone. Now, this whole thing was a flashback. Now we're back to the present time.
And he wakes up. Right, and it looks like he's in like a 1940s. Hospital
room.
More or less.
Yes.
Right.
But the problem is that he's listening to a radio that has a baseball game on. It's the Dodgers and the Phillies that happened in May 1941. When he disappears, it's 1943.
Oh.
And he goes like, oh, where am I really? And the nurse goes, no, you're really here. He goes, no. And he says, that's a Dodgers-Phillies game I was at in May 1941. In his mind, that took 2 years. 2 years prior, previously.
But in real life, he's way, 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 way into the future.
Yeah. Right. Then he punches the guards through the wall, and ends up in
the middle of Times Square.
Times Square, right. Of all places.
Mm-hmm. Well, Times Square was Times Square in the 1940s. It also,
but it looked
very different. Obviously, right.
Now,
there's a lot more electricity.
I question this
and
for one
lighting.
Reason: if you got a secret agent, would you stop him in the middle of New York, or would you take him somewhere else?
This is Hollywood talking. They want to put it in New York. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, there are military facilities in and around New York City, and
Shield was the behind of an antique store, so I guess it does make sense. Hide it in plain sight.
Well, hiding in plain sight.
Right. You're right. Right. I mean, there are military facilities all across the United States and other countries. But yeah, I mean,
and look, this is the first time we see Nick Fury in his role as Nick Fury, right? Well, as the because he tells everybody to stand down, and he goes,
right.
Yeah, and he goes.
Well, I mean, we had seen him in
One-on-One in Iron Man,
and then Iron Man and Iron Man 2 as well.
Well, yes, that's true too.
But he's becoming
that was like several weeks ago, so I completely forgot about that.
But he's becoming much more of a critical or much more important figure or a character in the series number one.
Now, one other thing that was part of this film was the Howling Commandos. So the team that Cap and Bucky are fighting alongside, that Cap rescues. So in the comic books, the Howling Commandos were led by
Steve Rogers.
No.
Oh, Nick Fury.
By Sergeant Nick Fury.
So
in the comics, Nick Fury was a World War II sergeant.
Who
led the Howling Commandos.
Okay.
And then he eventually becomes the director of S.H.I.E.L.D.
But the reason why he doesn't age is because a derivative of the super soldier formula was developed, and he kept on taking it. His twin brother held him like blackmailing him because he had to take this shot every year to stay young.
No, this is from the comics again.
From the comic books. Okay. Now, Nick Fury was a white sergeant in there until the Marvel Ultimate Universe, and they updated everything, and he wasn't from World War II anymore. He was from Vietnam.
Nah, I figured that, yeah.
And so then when the Marvel Ultimate Universe kind of was folded into the Marvel Universe.
Folded, yeah,
you know,
whatever.
You know, they blended them together.
Blended, that's better.
That's what, because Morales, the
Miles Morales,
is now part of the Marvel Universe, even though he came from the Marvel Ultimate Universe. And okay. So when they put everything together, everybody went, hold on, why are there two different Nick Furies? And so how this happens is the Nick Fury from the 40s had a son.
Okay.
And this is Nick Fury Jr., okay. But the name Nick Fury is a code name like James Bond.
Sure, of course, like anything.
So that's why he's called Nick Fury as well.
Oh, yeah, so anybody could be called Nick Fury if you wanted to, right?
Yeah, it's just so whoever gets the mantle is
Nick Fury.
Is Nick Fury.
But so that's one little change, though, they made where basically Cap is leading the Howling Commandos instead of Nick Fury.
Gotcha. And World War II. Okay.
Yeah.
But all those other characters
are very much so.
Dum Dum Dugan, Gabriel Jones.
I can't think of the other three guys.
Right.
There was six, but I think five of them kind of made it to the modern comics.
Right.
But Dum Dum Dugan is Captain America's best friend.
Right. Timothy Dum Dum.
Dum Dum
Dugan. Right. Yeah. And always had a bowler hat.
Yes. And he always carried a baseball bat. Mm-hmm. That's because in the movie he goes like, he says, if I ever get a stick or I'll get a bat, we're going to meet again. He says that to one of the agents of Hydra because he gets pushed into the cell.
Right.
Yeah. So
right. In the comics, he became part of SHIELD.
Yes.
And because he was always Nick Fury's kind of right hand man.
Yes. Well, they can't really do that anymore, can they? Because that was 80 years ago.
Right.
So, yeah, because he was an older Irish guy. He had red hair and a mustache, and he was a little on the heavier side, and he was probably in his 30s or 40s in there, so that would make him, like, 120 now.
Yeah, he wouldn't be around.
Yeah, he just couldn't do it. So now they ended it with him going, like, holy crap, I'm in the modern age.
Right.
Now,
I'm in Times Square, but I'm in a very, very, very different Times Square.
But now they come up with, like, James Bond. He says, Captain America will return in the Avengers.
Right, which is, like, the first time they did that.
Yes,
right.
Ever. Right. Now, here's another thing, is that how we have these little vignettes, these after-credit scenes and stuff, usually either talks about the next movie or enhances the universe.
Correct.
This one was basically an ad or a trailer for the Avengers.
Well, nothing wrong with that. I mean, getting ready for the next, you know, the next...
They've been building up to that, though.
Right.
Starting from the end credit sequence in Iron Man, where he talks about the Avengers Initiative. And then you have Tony talking to Thunderbolt Ross about the Hulk. At the end of Thor, they show... Well, at the end of Iron Man 2, they set up Thor. Yeah. At the end of Thor, they show Selvig...
And with the Tesseract,
talking to Fury, which kind of teases this one and the Avengers.
Right. Yes.
So, I mean, they're slowly building up to the Avengers.
Yeah, they all stand alone, but these chain together.
Right.
So
right.
I just felt that this is more of a trailer than an actual scene because it was just like all these things.
True.
It wasn't characters talking, interacting. Right. It wasn't just a scene of
Steve pounding the punching bag, and then Fury says, "says you have a mission for me."
Yes, okay. That end scene thing is that, you know, they show Steve Rogers punching a heavy bag. I need to get one of those. And then Nick Fury comes in and he goes, "You have a mission for me?" And he goes, "Yes, I do."
And that's an actual part of the Avengers movie itself, right?
Yes,
right.
And it's.
So it's actually
different,
right. It's a little bit different, but right. I mean, there's a scene in Avengers.
Yes.
Now, with that though, let me just, not that I'm not here to knock it. What I'm going to say is that, you know, there's a lot of people, and notwithstanding both you here present, other people that I've talked to, they're massive comic book fans. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were uber geeked, and I mean uber geeked for Avengers to hit the screen. I mean, basically,
when I saw that scene after the credits, my mind
right. Melted. So I mean, so I'm not saying they were playing to their target audience very well. And again, somebody like me who didn't read a lot of the Avengers comics, I read some, not less than you guys. So this was getting me. Oh wow, this is going to be really cool. Not that I wasn't going to see it anyway, but I mean, there were people telling me like, Larry, you know, after I see the Avengers movie in 2012, I can die peacefully. I mean, people are saying that to me. So again, this is really this is like a crescendo of building to this final act, which of course wasn't the final act, but you know, for a lot of people, that's all they need to see.
I didn't see this coming. I didn't see that until I saw the words, Captain America will appear in the Avengers. Your mind melts. They show the credits scenes like this, and you think, oh, we're done. No, second scene, and it's a flipping trailer for the Avengers, and we still got a whole year before it comes out.
But to be a little cynical, isn't the Avengers the sixth? I mean, Avengers was Paramount released, so yes. I mean that was the final picture in their deal.
Oh, no, I think this was the final.
Oh, was it? Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, right.
No. This is the number five.
Yeah,
Iron Man.
But by the
Hulk,
time, but by the time Avengers Captain was released, four, Disney America, had bought Avengers. Them up.
Right.
So Avengers was released by Disney.
It still had the Paramount logo on it, though.
Are you sure about that?
Well, we'll have to double check that. But we'll talk about that on next week's podcast.
And we'll talk about the Avengers.
Because
the Avengers,
this is next week is number six, and next week will end what Marvel calls phase one. Okay. And even though that Marvel was bought by Disney, they did a hands off approach until. What was it? Thor 3? Then it was completely Disney. I know the next few were already in the pipeline.
Sure, sure.
And so they said, we won't interfere with what you got
which
going.
Is smart, which is very smart.
Because
it worked.
Well, yeah, it
right,
worked.
Right, it all worked. But
because,
I mean,
they had the momentum going. They always had these things in pre-production. Why would you go in there and say, like, no, you have to change direction?
Right, which would be stupid, right?
Yeah, it's like, okay, until you're finished those and they're off your plate, then we'll start telling you what to do.
Right.
So you think that was a good idea that Disney did a hands-off
approach? Yeah. First of all, as we've talked about in other podcasts, like on Solo and other movies, you start reshooting things, your budget goes through the roof. So why reshoot things? Mm-hmm. Again, it's like the Raiders Lost Ark ball in the beginning. Mm-hmm. You got this momentum, just let it finish what it's doing
and let the cards lie where they lay.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, I think it's because their success rate is it's just like, well, you've had these successes so far. You've split the arrow over time. We're not going to mess with a formula that works.
Right.
Yeah, so the people that were running Disney at the time, which they've changed hands many times since then, I think did a very good
right, and you have to think of this is 2011, right? Because Captain America, the first Avenger, comes out in 2011, and we know Avengers came out May of 2012. Remember, up until then, recently, really, Warner Brothers was riding high on the Batman trilogy, mm-hmm. And then they had the Superman Returns, which is 2006, which did okay, but then
I loved it too.
Yeah. But the point is, the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy, that was all DC Comics, Warner Brothers, mm-hmm. and so they made a boatload of money off that. They really, in my opinion, brought back Batman, they expanded the concept of a superhero movie. So again, if I'm Disney saying, well, Marvel movies are a very different animal than the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. And I'm not saying that
bright,
they're bad.
And they're bright colors.
Right, which is fine. But so it's a contrast. It's literally a contrast from the Christopher Nolan kind of brooding, dark night movies, which are fantastic, to this Marvel movies.
But both of them.
So don't screw it up, is what I'm saying. They said, well, we could go a different direction. But let it ride.
Yeah,
because
since they owned it, they could have stepped in and go like, we want you to do this to it.
But if I was going to say, well, these Warner Brothers has their version, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. I still love them, mm-hmm. and we're going to have our version. So you can still see Batman with Christopher Nolan and Warner Brothers and DC, but then you can also come see ours. So mm-hmm. it's not like you're trying to. You have to choose. It's truly an expanded universe of superheroes.
And every single Marvel movie made more money than the previous ones.
So right. So why upset the apple cart?
Right.
You're raking in money.
Now, like we've done the other ones, would you say this is a buy, a stream, or a skip?
I mean, it's essential to the MCU. I mean, it really mm-hmm. is. So. You should at least stream it or buy it.
Okay, so you're right on the fence on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say either stream or buy, maybe depending on your level of interest in, you know, if you're a big Captain America fan or if you enjoy the period films, you might consider buying it, but for sure, at least the stream.
Okay, I'm going to go and go buy.
Okay.
Okay.
That's fine.
All right.
Not a problem. Absolutely.
All right. So now, next week, we're going to close out phase one, as Marvel calls it, with what everything's been building from 2008. Well, technically 2003, but that Hulk doesn't count. So 2008 forward. So they've done that. Yes. They've done this in 4 years then.
Right. They did, which is a lot of movies in the can.
Yeah. Yeah. And just think of how, you know, these are multi-million dollar films. Now, this, you know, these were huge budgets, and they've made it all back. And The Avengers, at the time, was the largest budgeted film.
Film of all, right, up until 2012, right.
Keep in mind, as we were just talking about, this is before Disney bought them, so Marvel is really...
They're financing it.
Right,
yeah, they're fronting the money.
Is still
right,
all
Marvel Studios.
Paramount's distributing it. Yes. But these are all owned by Marvel Studios.
Right. So this is all on them.
It's
if they mess it up,
cash, right.
It's all on them.
Right.
Right.
But they're functioning as an independent studio. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even when
at this right. point. And now we got seven main characters in one film now? Iron Man, Hulk, Thor, Black Widow, Hawkeye, Nick Fury, Captain America, Agent Hill, Coulson's still in there. So that's nine major characters.
And Loki.
And yeah. Loki.
Loki's crucial.
And Loki. So there's 10 major characters in one movie. So
it's
that's
a busy
never,
movie, right?
But it's never been done.
We can get more in depth next week. That's the... After the initial, we talked about Iron Man being the kind of the risk that they took.
Yes.
To me, Avengers is the next big risk that they take.
Because of all the characters. They have to juggle it all.
There were a lot, before the film came out, a lot of people doubted, can you pull that off? Can you pull off having...
many people.
Even if you stick with the main Avengers character, pull off having a half dozen superheroes in one film.
Right.
And have a continuity of plot line because everybody's going to have their own little thread,
right.
But it all has to congeal together and only 2 hours plus.
Right.
Right.
All right. Well,
so we got something to look forward to next week.
Yes, we do.
Coming soon, Avengers podcast.
To a podcast near you.
Speaking of podcasts, you could listen to us on iTunes, at Google Podcasts, at Stitcher, especially Stitcher. If you rate and reply on us, that would be wonderful. You could also reach us at geekculture.online, where you can listen to these podcasts on there as well. You could also reach us on Facebook at Geek Culture Online, Instagram at Geek Culture Online, and our favorite.
My favorite.
Your Geek Culture.
On Twitter.
On Twitter.
Tweet us.
Tweet us, please. Now you can reach me directly at patrick@geekculture.online. You can reach Larry at larry@geekculture.online. And Ethan, please write Ethan. He misses your comments at ethan@geekculture.online. All of us here, we want to greatly thank you for all the comments and everything. And I'm Patrick.
I'm Larry.
I'm Ethan.
We'll see you next week.